Hi, this is Marcy Burke from Avidog University. I'd like to start out by saying how incredibly honored we are that you have chosen to take your Litter A to Z. Our hope is that you'll learn a lot about what we do when we raise our own litters and learn how to apply all or part of it to your own breeding program. I'm joined today by my partners, Dr. Gail Watkins.
Hi, everybody.
And Lisa Pratt.
Hi, nice to be here.
As you get started in going through A to Z, we thought we'd give you some background on the course and a few highlights for this module, which we call Before Breeding Your Bitch. But before we get started, Gail, why don't you tell everyone how your Litter A to Z came to be?
Sure thing, Marce. So I started co-breeding with people around the country about 15 years ago, and I found myself writing them emails and writing Word documents to help them understand how to raise the litters the way that I did it. And over the years, it evolved into a pretty darn big book. Those co-breeders then wanted to share that book with other breeders, friends of theirs, or people that they met, but it really was written very specifically to our golden retrievers. So they encouraged me to make it into an online course, and here we are.
You know, one of the most interesting things to me about your litter A to Z is that it is a step-by-step plan for breeding and raising the litters, but it's more than just a list of the things that we do. It has such scientific foundation behind it that really may not be evident to the folks that are taking the course. So I thought that we should get started by talking about one of them, and that one is epigenetics. When Lisa and I first heard about epigenetics, it truly blew our minds. How could we not have heard about something that had such a huge impact upon our puppies? When we heard of it the first time was actually when we started co-breeding with Gail. And we thought, because we had not heard of it before then, that you may not have heard about it either. So Gail, I know this is a really complex subject, but could you briefly tell everybody what epigenetics is?
Gladly, because epigenetics is one of my favorite things to learn about. And I am not an epigeneticist or even a geneticist, but it really is my passion to try and understand this and then apply it to my dogs and our breeding program. The reason I think that most people haven't heard about epigenetics is because it's such a new science. And although we've had some idea of these epigenetic influences for years, it wasn't really until the human genome was sequenced that we began to really understand the mechanics behind them. And that was in 2003, not that long ago. So you can get an idea of how young epigenetics is. So what is this? Epi means above. So epigenetics are things that are above the genes or things that influence our genes. And we all know about DNA, genes, and chromosomes, but what we're beginning to understand is that each of us, you, me, our dogs, are not just about our genes. There are forces that turn some of our genes on and others off. And this is even true in identical twins like you guys, where people always thought that you were the same, but there are many, many things that influence how you develop. In fact, recent research in people shows that differences between relatively newborn human babies are only 25% genetic differences in their genes. The rest of the differences are the result of the interaction between the fetal environment, what was happening in the womb, and their genes. So it's what their mother ate, whether she smoked or drank, how happy she was. Those things all combine to create the majority of differences in the health and development of babies. I think that that in itself is pretty cool, but the really mind-blowing thing that we found recently is that some of these influences, the turning off and on of genes, can be passed on to kids and grandkids. We've had an idea of some of these things for decades, and it started really with radiation and our understanding of the influence of radiation on first pregnant mothers and then young people who later became parents and their babies' babies were showing the influence of radiation. But now we're finding out things like nutrition, toxins, stress, care, and even life experiences are changing how our and our dog's genes are expressed. So if we think of it from a dog perspective, it's whether or not their mom spends a lot of time cleaning them in the first few weeks. That can actually change our puppy's temperament. And if we get back to this specific module, the before we breed our bitch, what their mom ate before she got pregnant may be affecting how healthy our puppies are for their entire lifetime.
Gail, that's amazing how much an impact things that we don't even know about are actually having on our puppies and their puppies. So you just mentioned stress, and I've heard you mention it over and over before about properly stressing bitches and the puppies once they're born. But I keep reading in the news about how stress is bad for all of us. So if it's bad, why do we put so much emphasis on stressing our bitches and our puppies?
That is such a good question, and it probably goes far beyond dog breeding, but we'll just start with thinking about it from the perspective of dogs. There's good stress and there's bad stress. And good stress we call enrichment. And it's the things that our dogs enjoy or can, that they don't mind striving for. So that could be work, if you have a working breed, other activities, walks and frisbee and ball throwing for other dogs. It can be touching and grooming. And those things stimulate this really important part of her body. That's called the HPA, or the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal system. And that is the stress management system, but it connects into all of the other systems in the body. If instead we put too much stress on our bitches, that is often flying them or shipping them. It might be poor conditions, rough handling, or, you know, just generally demanding things of her that she doesn't enjoy, that would have a negative impact on the HPA system. That's one of the things we really have to remember as breeders, that good or bad in terms of stress is defined by the dog. It really depends upon the dog's temperament and personality. So, for example, if you have a really timid bitch, you might not do these same things that you would do to enrich her life that you would do with a really bold bitch. Or even if you are doing training with a dog, if you have a dog that loves to work and really enjoys, say, in agility, practicing weave pulls, then that would be good stress. But if you have one of those dogs that shuts down in the weave pulls, doing weave pull training would be bad stress. Now, we care about that because the stress on the dam before the pups are born changes those puppies for a lifetime. So, for example, good stress makes puppies that are more resilient to stress during their lifetime. They're able to recover from bad stress or overwhelming stress much more quickly. They generally are calmer. They learn more quickly, and they even have better digestive and immune systems, as well as better sexuality, so they're better producers. Bad stress, on the other hand, affects that HPA system in a really negative way, and it causes puppies that have dysfunctional stress management systems, shorter attention spans, they're more anxious, hyperactive, and irritable, all things we want to be avoiding in the puppies we produce.
Wow, that's really amazing. We hear more and more about nutrition. I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about whether nutrition has, or whether epigenetics, I should say, has any role in nutrition and how that affects or should affect what we feed our dams.
I think I said in this week's report, in this module's report, that second only to genes, nutrition is the main force that influences the temperaments and life and well-being of our puppies. And it's particularly the dam's nutrition. So this is a subject that's really near and dear to my heart. I think most breeders know that we need to feed a good quality food to our dams. And there's a lot of debate about it, and I'm not going to get into a discussion of brands. But I'm going to mention three really important supplements that every breeding animal should get, and specifically every breeding bitch. And that's DHA, probiotics, and folate, or more familiarly known as folic acid. So let's start with DHA, which is docosahexaenoic acid. And that's a really important omega-3 fatty acid. It comes from grass-fed meats, it comes from wild fish, and algae, although most of our dogs are not eating algae. A while ago, I wrote a blog on why we need to add this nutrient to our bitches food. So I'm not going to repeat it here, and we'll put a link in the module for that additional resource so that you guys can link directly to it. But I would like to talk about what that does for puppies and why it's important. So puppies whose moms have had high doses of DHA are born with better vision. Well, they're not born with better vision, but they develop better vision. They're more trainable. They learn more quickly. And now there's growing evidence that they have a stronger immune system and lower rates of cancer. This carries over if we also begin to add that nutrient, DHA, to the puppy's food once they're weaned. Probiotics, the second of the really important supplements, are those good bacteria that we add into our dog's diets to help their gut. And most people and breeders think of them as digestive aids. But the more important role that they play is in immunity. And it's so interesting that puppies develop the microbiome or the bacteria in their guts just before and then during the birthing process, literally during the birthing process, which is amazing to me. So when they start down the birth canal, they have a limited number of bacteria, and by the time they arrive in the world, they have a lot of it. And a lot of it is trillions of bacteria, which is pretty remarkable to me. Those bacteria train or tutor the puppy's immune system as it develops and matures for the first few months. So we want to make sure that our dams have strong microbiomes because that's where the puppies get it from. One of the important things that we need to realize is we shouldn't depend upon our dogs' food or kibble or canned food for those probiotics. There was a Canadian study done a few years ago that looked at all the dog foods that quote-unquote contain probiotics, and they found that none of them, zero, contained all of the bacteria listed on the label. And so their recommendation is to not depend upon the dog foods and instead add the probiotics to a dog's food. And there's recommendations in the report, in our report for this module that I won't go into, but yogurt is typically not the best way to do that. And then finally, I want to mention one of the most well-known epigenetic nutritional forces, which is vitamin B9 or folate. We've known for years that supplementing pregnant women, and some of us have known for years dogs, with folate decreases neural tube defects and cleft palates. And for dogs, cleft palates is a huge problem. This supplementation, it's important to know, is needed early in pregnancy, from conception until the end of the second trimester. It really doesn't do much good after that. Now, folate, you can do it through whole foods. That's going to be grass-fed meat, liver, and dark leafy greens, but the dogs have to eat a whole lot of it to get the right amount of folate, so it's much easier to supplement with over-the-counter folic acid supplements. And you'll see in this week's module that we recommend for the average breed or the vast majority of breeds a small amount, 400 micrograms a day. That's what most women take, so it's really easy to find. But some breeds, most of the brachiocephalic breeds, the short-nosed breeds, and genetically predisposed breeds, such as Nova Scotia duck tollers, need 5 milligrams a day. So the average dog needs 400 micrograms, and these predisposed breeds need 5 milligrams. The AFCO standards, the feeding standards for dog foods in North America, only require 2 micrograms per pound of food. So to get 400 micrograms or 5 milligrams a day in, your dog either has to eat a whole lot of food or you want to give the over-the-counter supplement.
Yeah, I can see some really pudgy dogs eating that amount of food. Well,
happy
thanks
ones.
A million, huh?
Happy ones, perhaps, but pudgy.
Exactly, very happy. Well, thanks a lot for, you know, I know you've just touched on the subject of epigenetics because I know it goes so far into basically everything we do with our dogs, but nutrition is such an important part of it. I wanted to ask you before we hang up, we really had a great question during office hours, and I thought we really should share it with everyone. One of the students wanted to know, why is it necessary to run a brucellosis test on maiden bitches and virgin stud dogs? Gail, would you explain that to people?
Yeah, that was such a good question and an important one for everyone to understand. So brucellosis is a reproductive or venereal disease of dogs, and it causes fetal death and abortion. Just for everyone's knowledge, it also, cattle get it, camelids like camels and alpacas also get it, and the really scary part is people get it. And the dog version of this disease is considered uncurable. Even with long-term antibiotic therapy in many, many dogs, it comes back again. And because it can be transferred to people, it is one that the government pays an awful lot of attention to. So how do dogs get brucella? It's passed from dogs to dogs only through direct contact, not through air or coughing or anything like that. Most often it's done through sex, but it can also be transferred by licking vaginal fluids or urine. And we all know how much dogs like to do that. So even virgin dogs that have never had sex, if they have the opportunity to sniff, touch, or lick urine or vaginal secretions from an infected dog, they can get brucella. And sadly, if your dog gets brucellosis, you only have two options. You can either euthanize it, or you can keep your dog on your property away from other dogs for the rest of its life. Because it's untreatable, the dog can never go out in public, and if you have more than one dog, it will easily transfer it from one to the other. So as you can see, it's not treatable, it's very dangerous, it could be transferred to people. The best idea is to test all breeding stock regularly, and it's an inexpensive test. It's much easier to do that than to risk the loss of your dog. And brucella is on the rise in the United States. It had been beaten down for many, many years. We thought we might actually have it completely under control, but probably in the last 10 years, there's been a significant rise in canine brucellosis.
Wow. Telling me that I might have to euthanize my dog would give me a real shot in the arm to make sure that I get out and test my breeding stock regularly. And I know we're blessed because our repro team reminds us every time we go in that we need to check our records and see when that last test was done. So thanks for the great reminder.
Yeah, sorry for the bad news, though.
Well, everybody, thanks so much for joining us. Don't forget that you can ask your own questions during email office hours every Wednesday between 9 and noon Eastern Time and on your biweekly Q&A calls. We sure do love hearing from you, so be sure to check in. If you want to know more about epigenetics, we do talk a bit more about it in actually a lot more than a bit, in much greater detail, in our course, Introduction to Transformational Dog Breeding. So if you'd like to join us in that course, we'd love to have you on that as well. Again, thanks so much, Lisa and Gail. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you guys soon.
Great talking to everybody today. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.